this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey guys, welcome back to Indie Comic Book Noise. It's episode 374, guys. I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Andrew the LA Rabbit out in LA, which is good since that's what his parents named him. It's good that you moved there. Kevin up in, greater Toronto area, maybe, sort of, kind of, up in Canada. And he's down with, he's been poisoned by, because of the Bittner-Hawk alliance breaking down, unfortunately, by Hawk Pharmaceuticals. So he's fighting it for the team here. And Phil, we had, but lost, and hopefully we can get him back, but he's having some sort of computer problem. So the circle's closing in, but holy smokes, it's been a month since our last episode, so I think we have to forge on, boys.
Well, why are you talking like we're recording a podcast or something? I'm confused.
I think we are recording this one.
How do you do this again?
It'll all come back to you. It's like riding a bike. I'll make it easy all right. for you.
It might be the head cold. I'm not sure.
Just worry about breathing and take your medicine, God's sakes. Take your medicine.
They told me it'll make me healthy.
So, Andrew, it's been a while since I've talked to you almost in any format. I assume you've been to like 7 cons since I've seen you last. You must have been to a show or two. What do you got for us?
I did go to Comic Arts LA at its second year. That one's a fun one. It's a free show. The problem is first weekend December is just downright lousy timing. As you get older, kids, I'll warn you, your obligations around the holiday time get larger and larger and larger. So it gets to the point where you're booked from like mid-November right through to like the beginning of January. But I of course, carved out time for this. It was in the same location. It's free, as I mentioned. They had like 37 tables, but they split them. Like usually most people, you know, they split 2. So that meant there was a lot of people at the show. And they also had panels in the back. It was a 2-day show this time.
Huh.
And last time, I think it was just the 1 day. So I had obligations on Saturday, but made time to rush down there on Sunday. And holy cow, it was jam-packed. Those of you that follow me on Twitter, LA_rabbit1, saw some blurry photos of just people jam-packed row to row. And I guess it was a really good show. I went back and saw the open space because it's a gallery normally. It's the Think Tank Gallery, so they had their exhibit going on currently. But they do the show then. And I just worked the tables and went through and bought a bunch of comics. It's super comic book heavy. Cool. Like there are a few people that just had prints, but I'm going to say mostly it was comics.
Wow.
I just wanted to give a more of my worthless advice from the wrong side of the aisle. Like it goes a long way if you're somewhat engaging. I know you didn't get into making funny books because you wanted to sell crap to people.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be like a slick salesman, but we all have weird personality defects and everything. But any little effort to reach out and interact with me oftentimes, you know, rewards a sale. Now, I know you can't tell looking at people if this is a real customer or just a looky-loo, but my advice would be like, I know it's tough, but if you're going to be there,
get a booth, babe.
Put yourself out.
For Andrew. Andrew wants
well,
you to get
well, just otherwise, I don't know why you're taking time out. You're getting a table. I mean, I guess you must sell plenty of books as you stare down at your notebook constantly or whatever. But for me, and the other thing, and this is my own personal pet peeve, I am a little bit price sensitive. Not super, but it's really hard for me to spend $10 on a single comic, and definitely $20 is a lot to ask. Because I saw one, and then when I looked, and I was like $20. It was a little bit bigger, but I'm like, That's for me, that's a lot. I guess you just need to sell a lot less of them so it works out in the run. But I don't, again, I assume everyone knows their own business, but $20 for a book, that's a lot. That being said, most of my purchases were in the $5 range, and I felt, you know, very happy.
They still make $5 comics? Wow.
Holding the line, $5.99. Oh, jeez.
Well, I assume it's actually less than five because I assume they're taking the taxes out and, you know, rounding it up so it's $5 even. But, so I picked up a couple of books, including a book from the same person I got a book from last year. They had their new issue out. So it was nice to – I always really like when, you know, if you're going to do this thing, that's my other thing is put new product out and people will respond to it. But the guy caught me totally flat-footed because he's like – oh, if I can ask, like, what? Why did you, you know, what drew you to the book in the first place? And I didn't tell the truth, which is, well, I vaguely remember the cover and liking it. Because, you know, I bought that thing like a year ago. I don't remember the kind of deep, like, I just remember I kind of liked it. Oh, I bought the first one. I liked it, but I couldn't have that look. I had zero details whatsoever on it. So
do you remember what book?
I kind of waffled a little bit. It was... probably talked about a mascot Zodiac here, so I have number two, and it's kind of his growing up story. Like the subject of all these comics is, you know, it crosses between stories about slackers, stream of consciousness, autobiographical, the kind of crude ones, and then the like whimsical kiddie ones. Like, and I lean more lately towards the whimsical. While I don't really like Adventure Time and that sort of stuff, I like that sensibility, so I bought some books in that realm because it was, I'm kind of over the let's be transgressive and everything. Not that I, you know, if it's good, I'll still get it, but I was like, feel like that's kind of been, for me personally, just not where I'm interested in. I've read plenty of them comics, and it just seems like it's all been ground, it's been tread before.
Fair enough.
I'm into dogs pissing on the first page. That's what I'm really into. Then you know it's an indie comic.
There's lots of that, and you can have, you know, people having sex with corpses and stabbing each other, and, you know, Johnny Ryan type books. And I find this stuff kind of funny, but it's just like, I think it's tough to walk that line. Like, I get enough of that through Johnny Ryan. I don't feel like I need 10 different versions of that. And you can read his stuff on Vice.com. He's the in-house cartoonist.
Is that what the kids? Is that a kids' website? The Vice.
They have the magazine and the TV show on HBO. Now they have their own TV channel. They started as an internet journalist.
No, I just barely found out about that like last year.
Oh yeah, well they were big. I came across them because they did a bunch where they snuck into North Korea and filmed it. They didn't sneak in North Korea, but they snuck their cameras in. And so they went on these tours and they filmed. And so you saw what was North Korea was like. And that was a pretty ballsy move because obviously, you know, if you get caught in North Korea, you better hope the president doesn't mind sending, a high-ranking diplomat to negotiate your freedom. And they were also the ones that arranged, I think, for Dennis Rodman to go over there a few years ago and everything. So, but yeah, it's just a fun, we're getting far, far afield from comic books. But I have a few books I'll talk about, but I'll wait till we get to the comic book talking. But I did feel super out of place. Like it's like the whole art crowd. And then there's fat, dopey Andy wandering around in my own way, a stereotype, glasses. Reading comics, wondering where the superheroes are.
Well, you know, you sound like me, except that it would be like El Skinny Guy wandering the aisles, looking where the long boxes are, so he could buy some dollar, you know, stuff.
You said the place was filled with comics, so you shouldn't have felt too out of place.
It had a vibe that I was not. I was never at the cool kids' table, and that isn't. That was true back when I was in the right age range, and now that I'm older, it's not made me any cooler or hipper. So there's a bit of a disconnect with the hip crowd, but eh, what the hell? My money spend is good, so screw it. They did have a few larger vendors, but it was mostly people just hawking their own stuff, which was nice. Like, they don't really have, you know, there were no big long boxes or anything. But it's also interesting now, all the different collectives. Like, a lot of these people, you know, they belong to multiple different kind of printing companies and comic book companies and submit and everything. I think it's an interesting time to be a creator of all the outlets with Tumblr and everywhere else. I don't know how remunerative it is, but it certainly seems like you got your choice of venues.
Hey, before we break down Kevin's genetic code with a discussion of Lazarus, I got to mention, too, thanks to the listeners out there who have been popping up likes on our Facebook page. We've been getting at least a new like, it seems like, every other day for the last couple of months on average. So thanks very much, guys. It's awesome. We've got a Facebook page, Indie Comic Book Noise, and the Twitter handle is Indie Comic Book N. And I'm at Steve Raker, and you said you were, Andrew, at LA underscore rabbit one, and Kevin is WWX Kev.
So yeah, the indie Twitter is mainly used to harass Slurmo, but yeah, it's usually posts something.
It's not a force for good, you're saying? It's a force for evil?
It's just the whole nondescript method of that it's a podcast handle. So sometimes it's it gains sentience and goes off on its own business. Sometimes.
So you enjoy the further. It's not anonymous enough to be on the internet on the webs commenting, but you like enjoy the further anonymity of being under a podcast handle. So you can really let it fly. Is that what you're saying? All right.
Sometimes.
He's saying that the Twitter handle has gained its own sentience, and he is no longer in control of it.
Well, anything that the Twitter handle has to state, it may or may not be expressing the views of any of the hosts of Indie Comic Book Noise or its subsidiary company, the Comic Book Noise family and the Deliberate Noise Network.
So I think we need more disclaimers in general.
Which is great is that I've finally had time to read some books, and given the crazy Marvel Secret Wars finale delay and my insistence to finish reading that story in order before I jump into the new books there has freed me up. It has freed me of the self-inflicted bonds that have been suppressing my ability to get to other books. And I've been dying to get to Greg Rucka and Michael Lark's Lazarus.
Yes, finally a win for the indie guys.
20 issues deep. The 21st issue will come out in January of 2016. And then it goes on like a four-month hiatus, I believe. And one of the issues that comes out is just going to be a source book in there before we get back to storytelling. So it's a good time to read a nice complete chunk. There's the regular issues, there's trade paperbacks, there's a real nice hardcover collection that's like the first two trade paperbacks with tons of back matter that is worthy of this story and this world that's being built here. Lazarus, it's really awesome. You've been reading it, Kev?
Yeah.
Michael Lark,
I generally like it, but I still some, I guess on occasion I have a bone to pick with the book, which is
cool. Good.
I don't know. It is what it is, you know.
Get into it with me in a second as I present the basic gist of it and chime in where appropriate. But first I got to say Michael Lark's artwork I really enjoy. He's in that, I kind of group him in a kind of a family of artists who have a similar style that are out there now, kind of that Steve Epting, Stefano Guadagnino, Mike Perkins, and Lark are kind of produce some of that same artwork. And really, what it is, it's all like a riffs on Al Williamson to me.
Yeah. And they've worked together on other books. That's a big two together, like either inking each other or something like that.
Yeah, I wonder if they're all out of the same studio or at least have crossed paths. They're probably all out of Williamson's studio. But what we have with Lazarus is real nice story arcs. It's a great book to read in chunks, which unfortunately goes against their publishing strategy of publishing the single issues, and they're not getting much reward on that because people are so digging into the trades, and it's really understandable the way that the material reads. It's a post-financial worldwide crisis world here, and the world's been chopped up into territories that are controlled by what are basically like corporate crime families. You know, there's a pharmaceutical company head who runs the east side of North America, and then like the northern part of that is they're the Bittners, and the Hawks are the American part of that side of North America, and the Carlisles own the whole west side of Canada and the west side of America, and the Morays own what used to be Central America and parts of South America. And it's really interesting, and everyone has their own reasons and histories for how they came into power, and they each, well, at least some of them have apparently shared genetic information such that they can create or enhance an individual to be their kind of like their enforcer, who is sort of like a Wolverine type warrior who can heal from any wound except for a beheading. And these are the Lazaruses. So some of the families, some of the territories have a Lazarus, and they can be like field generals, or they could go in head-to-head combat if challenges are made in the appropriate venue between the leaders of different domains and that kind of stuff. It's really crazy. And this is the story of Forever, who is Carlyle's Lazarus. And she, again, that's operating on the west coast of the United States and the west side of Canada. There's all sorts of conflict going on with, you know, boundary disputes and stuff. So there's all this political intrigue. There's kind of finding out more information about what's going on within the Carlisle territory. And then there's Forever's personal story, because she's trying to figure out who she is. And she doesn't know that was born in a test tube, and she's considered part of this family, the Carlisles, and she's being messed with, you know, psychologically. And there's a real caste system where your family or your serfs working for the family, or you're just waste. And the waste are just scrounging, which sucks. And Carlisle's son, who runs L.A., he's treacherous. And the whole first storyline family ends with him getting taken down and running. And he runs to one of the neighboring territories. And rather than them giving him asylum and him having some sort of bargaining chip of information, they're like, we already know everything through espionage except for the genetic information that you hold. So they carve him up to get genetic information to enhance more individuals. And this turns into this big story arc, the third story arc, Conclave, where all of the heads of all of the different states, territories, all meet at this neutral zone. So you get to meet everybody's Lazaruses and see how they all interact, which is really cool. Like, while the bigwigs are all posturing, the Lazaruses are like training together, and they have actually kind of a kinship with each other and a respect that's kind of cool, even though that at any minute they could be ordered to have to kill each other, and they would do so in a heartbeat. Really cool storyline. And the last story, that's the final issue is yet to come out of, is called Poison, and that's because the Conclave ends with one of the heads of states being poisoned by the pharmaceutical head of state, and that I think is the SARS type epidemic, the bird flu, the avian flu that Kevin's suffering from.
SARS.
But I don't know. I find the whole thing really intriguing, the way that information was slowly disseminated about the world let me get it into nice chunks that didn't hit me with everything all at once and bore me from the beginning. Instead, I was curious and interested, and I don't always agree with Rucka's politics, which come through quite a bit, but it is just a fun story. And he said this is a long form. This is like 100 to 150 issue story, he said, which is cool. And Lark doesn't want anybody else to draw it but him. So I think this has a long way to go. We're only 20 issues in.
It's going to be a long haul, jeez.
But every arc has been satisfying, though.
Yeah, I think the third arc, I think I talked about it on this show before, was my favorite. It was sort of, you know, everyone's dancing and playing poker and goofing around, but it's like a serious high stakes type of, I don't know if you would say James Bond, but there is.
I thought Bond.
There is
all
something
the time.
About it that I really liked.
Yeah, you know, people are bitter enemies, but they're like hanging out with each other and it seems genuinely enjoying each other's company, right? Yet they're at each other's throats and they know they will be tomorrow. And that stuff is cool. Let's rejoice today because tomorrow, you know, we might die. It's cool.
So you read this in the...
Wait, Andrew.
Oh, I was just going to say, if anyone's a real glutton for punishment, it was Indie Comic Book Noise episode 354, where we discussed Lazarus. Go back almost a year ago to January.
It's going to be like one of those Thunderbolts segments for Marvel Noise where we get to hear what like Kevin from the past said about the material.
No.
Now that I've read, I can go back and hear what Kevin said 20 episodes ago and what he thought.
Awesome.
And you can too, dear listener. So what's your beef about Lazarus?
Well, I was going to mention some of the extra stuff that impressed me about the book rather than
that's good of you.
Go into some angry rant.
There's everything but a map, Kevin. I mean,
well, I think there effectively is a map. Like, since I read it in issues and, you know, pay for everyone else's enjoyment of the book so it can continue on, I guess, in a way. But yeah, they always have, like, paragraphs on, like, the different families or the fake ads.
Yes.
Or, like, just a lot of bonus material. Or even in, like, some of the letters.
Yes.
Like, some thoughtful letters, and then Rucka will, or even Lark sometimes, will respond to the letters and say, you know, I hadn't actually considered that, but, because, I don't know, if you know Rucka, he does a lot of research. Like, almost, like, too much research on a lot of his stuff, so he has a lot of thoughts and stuff to say. But I think, when I think back on it, like, something like the Surrogates series from Top Shelf, like, it had a lot of fake ads. I'm like, this is cool. I don't know if a lot of, it's probably old hat, but I don't think I had seen it a lot at that point. So this sort of brought me back to that type of thing, but even like the crests of the different companies, like they'll say, oh, well, this company started in 1867, and then they have like someone designing like the evolution of the crest over the next 100 years.
Yes, and or even just the whole fake history of each of the companies, because they take it from before our lifetimes and through our lifetimes and then into this fictional future. Right, so that you see, they really try to pull the "this is our world after the shit hits the fan."
Yeah,
and they really pull in those tendrils, and so much so that I'm almost find myself looking to see if Rucka took existing companies, you know what I mean, and has evolved them, or if it's all fiction, and which is fun. And the back matter is such that you don't have to have it to understand or enjoy the story, but there is additional information in there that reveals stuff about how things happened and how things got to be the way they are and how those pieces got to end up in the places that they are on the chessboard when these stories take place.
Yeah, I think you had a timeline in one where it was like point X, like year X is when everything started to go south. And I always think of in the real world, like you can pick any sort of when the economy went down and then it sort of never came back. And that's sort of like the point X for Lazarus.
Yep. And a financial crisis and a contested election in the U.S. at the same time where each side was claiming to be in charge and basically splitting the army and one side running to the West Coast and one side running to the East Coast, staying on the East Coast and having those margins be drawn right there.
Yeah, it's the blue and the iron, Steve.
it's Civil War, Steve.
Basically.
But it's reasonably realistic. Like, there might be certain things where you're like, well, someone would come back from that, but it's all like, oh, well, there's these pills or there's this cutting-edge research that's going on right now which could lead to this, so that explains this plot point or something.
I love how everybody in Hawk's domain takes, like, a dozen pills a day. And you know that because he's this pharmaceutical dude that, he's totally controlling the populace and managing everything. And it's really very clever. Very clever story.
Yeah, it's not just about health, like, some, like, mind control and everything to do with stuff like that. And then they deal with, like, religion and how other aspects of society would still function or why they would want them to still function. Like, they might want some underground, like, libraries or newspapers to exist so they can know what the waste are thinking about and what they're doing. So you sort of, like, have a heads up. Otherwise, you would have to go to other means to figure out what's going on.
Just don't leave your house or your land, otherwise it immediately becomes property to the family.
Yeah. But there must be, like, one island out there where the guy's just not aware of what happened to the rest of the world.
Jamaica.
Well, I always think that's, like, isn't that a classic sci-fi trope where, like, the war ended 50 years ago and they think it's still going on?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here's the opposite. What war?
But yet, sometimes the book makes you work for things, and there was that one issue where it was, like, in that scripted, weird font, and it was hard to read, and it totally took me out of the book. And I know it was hard to read, and, like, you were supposed to work for it and everything, like it was a real journal and everything, but I'm like, this is detracting from my enjoyment and from the book. Like, no. I guess it's interesting when, like, someone will try this out, but ultimately I'm like, for me as a reader, that was a failure because that was, like, the least enjoyable issue. Like, I sort of remember this issue of Satellite Sam where, like, a guy was coughing and he was talking at the same time, but the coughing was sort of overlaid over the words, so it was hard to read. And I'm like, that is just not fun.
Yeah. I encountered that issue, if I'm not mistaken, was the nun, her, like, journal, writing her thoughts down each day as the story was going on. And I'll be honest with you, after the first one, I agree with you. I gave right up on it. It was enough for me to know that she was writing things down, but I just read the story for the story, and I just it didn't slow me down after the first time. So I was like, nope, not going there. And you're right, that was the least enjoyable issue. But hey, one out of 21 for the first four story arcs ain't bad.
Yeah. And I guess you have to respect, like, oh, we're trying to do something different. Like, that's cool and everything. Like, it's an indie comic. You can do whatever you want. It's just, like, after a certain point, like, yeah, you're just reading the story and you're not along for that part of the ride. You're just like, okay, this isn't going to be every month anyways.
Yeah, but I'm reading it in chunks, so I had five more waiting for me. So I was like, boop, next.
In that case, that probably would have been good because you would have been like, this is just a bump in the road. But for me, I'm like, well, that's a month of Lazarus
gone. Screeching halt, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the idea of them doing the pause is in so that they can publish monthly reliably for the next bunch of arcs or next several. So rather than doing it like every 6 weeks, like it's been coming out.
So, yeah.
We'll see.
I think it's pretty common at Image that you set up some type of schedule. I think it's better if at least you're confident that it is on some sort of schedule, but rather than issues just coming out random, you're like, well, there are 7 weeks there and 9 weeks here, and you don't know if it's canceled or what's going on. Like, if you do an arc, you break, arc, break. At least you know it's coming out.
And Greg Rucka was just on our pal John Suntress's Word Balloon podcast with a long conversation, and he didn't talk much about Lazarus' story as much as he talked about the business of doing Lazarus, which is what made me think of it as you're talking about the publishing schedule. Let's get Andy back on this book.
On that.
What's that?
I was going to also comment on the snow in the latest arc.
Oh.
Like, it sort of reminds me of like Daredevil fighting in the rain. Like, when you have that snow, and I'm just like, oh, man.
It can be used just real nice.
I know. Even if it's just like some kind of pattern or whatever they're using to make it, I'm just like, that is just crazy. Like, I don't know, something about that I just love.
Yeah. Because it makes a pattern where the absence of the pattern is where the story is. You know, where the characters are. And that's cool. It shrinks the panel, but with the weight of the weather. Andrew.
Yes, sir.
Just making sure you're
I'm still here. I'm alive. I got comics.
Give me a comic. Give me a C.
All right, the first book I picked up was Black Sheep.
Oh,
from Funhouse. Funhaus, and this is Mr. Fred Noland, but it's like No Land. And he has his own website. You can go to frednoland.com and take a look, because the first part of the first issue of Black Sheep is online. And I was asked the guy, like, what's a good comic? And he actually directed me to the latest issue, which was number 3. And the cover number 1, I was like, this is very Pete Bagg inspired. And he's like, yeah, Pete Bagg's a big hero of mine. So Black Sheep is about this mid-20s kind of slacker goof-off types. What's interesting about it is, well, it's the smaller size comic. I mean, it feels like it's the same number of pages, color cover, and black and white interiors. But what was kind of weird is I think it's probably set in early 2000. There's no date on it, but given the song references and everything else, so it's kind of a fun. The other thing I like is it's the third printing and it's 2013. But for me, it's new comics. Like, I haven't read it before. So, yeah, it features these real, like, dirtbag types. Like, the first guy's 25 and still living at home with his mom and paying child support and everything. And his kind of burnout friend comes and they go drink beers out. And then he does a nice linking thing where the two guys are griping and the guy's like, oh, you wouldn't like my boss. And then it cuts to the boss. And the boss, one of his friends, is in town and drags him to the strip club, which is a real rundown kind of. Well, you can imagine an underground cartoonist. He's let up on the Pete Bagg a little, but still no one in this book is going to look like a supermodel, if you know what I mean. But I like the kind of humor. It's got humor in it, but it's got that kind of, like, if you don't like those kind of burnout. I mean, obviously two of them have jobs and everything, but they're kind of maybe not going anywhere. Like, the one guy also does. Probably the most favorable character is Ivan. And he's the boss, and he also writes, like, obscure music critic-type stuff. So, it was just this fun kind of these. I like the linking mechanism of going from one character to the next that way. And I would totally read more of Black Sheep. It was a fun little comic. So, frednoland.com.
Cool. Kevin. What else you got to get off your chest?
Well, since we've been delving into this particular vein of comic booking with Lovecraft and everything, I thought I was going to read something with the main character called Lovegood. From a little title I discovered on Comixology called Outer God. Hmm. So I read part one. I noticed there's five other parts up there that I'll probably pick up at some point because this was really cool. It's by Luke LaBelle and Daryl Toe, I'm guessing. It's a whole like Egypt expedition and crazy unseen horrors type of a story.
Cool. I love Egypta.
Yeah. The issue starts with like, it's like, I guess sort of the end of someone's story where they're like writing a journal where with this weird like noise of a, like a monster or whatever you don't really see in the background is going on. So they want to write out this thing of everything that's happened to them and then mail this journal to someone else. So it's like once they're gone, like someone else can sort of try to piece together what happened, or they'll know what happened. Because that's sort of like where the narration comes from. Hmm. So I thought, considering what I've been reading recently, like I thought this was really cool. You get introduced to all the characters as it goes into the dig. Like, you always have, like, your bodyguard and the company that financed you for this dig and everything. Like, they're digging out a huge pyramid. It's supposed to be, like, 300 meters tall. So, like, they said it's, like, the biggest pyramid. Probably the biggest pyramid ever type of thing.
It's too big to be and, a like, space station.
Could be weird. And then, like, the pilot doesn't... The pilot doesn't even know where he's, like, bringing them. It's, like, it's very secret, and everyone's, like, living right on location. So they go into all these, like, weird happenings that are going on there. And then you get some of the, like, the Hellboy type of darkness, like, where everything just sort of melts away onto, like, the black of the page, like, when they start descending through, the, like, the top of the pyramid. So I think it works pretty well on, like, usually they have white borders, and then, like, the black on your computer screen, it's sort of, like, without the borders, it just sort of melts away, and it's, like, the whole, your whole screen is effectively, like, the panel. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool, and people start going missing, and you get that a feeling of dread, and you're like, well, something's not quite right here. And that's what the main character says in this issue too. Like, they come down there, they see a lot of weird statues and stuff like that, and then stuff that isn't Egyptian as well. There's just like one room where there's just like a lot of hands like sculpted into stone coming out of like a hole in the ground, and you're like, well, that's kind of strange. So, like, only a few guys, like, survive this type of thing, and you don't really know what's going on, but this one guy apparently was missing for, like, 3 weeks. And they're like, well, the doctor's asking him, like, well, are you hungry or anything? And he's like, no, not really. Well, you were missing for 3 weeks. And you're like, well, that's kind of odd. So just, like, a lot of weird mysteries and underlying creepy stuff.
See, and when they're living right on site like that, that makes it a lot easier to bond with the local curses. They can really get you.
I think so.
That sounds good. I'm going to read that.
All right. We'll come back and reconvene.
Yes. I'll have it read for next time. See what's going on with that. I'll tell you if you were full of shit or if you were... on to something.
Well, if you don't enjoy the story, the artwork is at least worthwhile because it's really good, I think.
Which is the perfect segue, actually, to the book I wanted to mention next, since I am enjoying reading these trades that have strong female leads in sort of these future wasteland type environments. I read from Aspen Comics. I don't think I've ever mentioned an Aspen comic on this podcast yet. But this is Lola XOXO. by Sia Oum, O-U-M. And she writes it and draws it. And she's the colorist as well. And she does a really fantastic job. I really like her stuff. It definitely has a touch of that, a little bit of that kind of Top Cow, that little bit of that like Kenneth Roquefort type scratchy edge line. But it's so fine that the features and the characters and the forms are still really can be still really pretty and sharp, even though it's scratchy up close. And it lends itself to her coloring really nice. And given that this is a futuristic post-apocalyptic wasteland, the color scheme and the browns and the earth tones and everything, it's just a really well colored comic, and people's flesh as it relates to the scenery and stuff, it's cool. The first trade covers the story of this little girl, 5 years old. She is stuck in an airport, being sent from her parents who are continuing on their vacation. She's being sent to her grandma's in L.A., I think, Andrew. But nuclear war breaks out, and she's stuck in an airport, and she kind of bumps into this former military guy, Conrad, who befriends her, and he's saying, oh man, my wife was in L.A., and she's saying, oh man, my grandma was in L.A., and they kind of join, their paths are aligned from there on, and then the story flash forwards 20 years, and she grows up to be a babe. I mean, this is an Aspen comic, and she still runs with Conrad, who was her father figure all these years, and her training mentor and everything, so she's kind of a kick-ass lead female type character, and they're a small band of survivors. They're kind of looking out for themselves and stuff, but she wants more and wants to find her parents, who, let's face it, probably aren't still alive after 20 years, but she holds out hope. So she steals a horse and she heads out to find her adventure, but she gets caught by the owner of the horse, who is this guy Edgar, the owner of this wasteland trading company, who is a big powerful guy. He wears a suit while everyone else is wearing ripped up clothes and things to shelter themselves from the strong sun. And she has to pay off her debt to him by joining his like security force, basically. And there's also this side thing going on where there are these carnies who, like the circus, the carnival is people fighting the like circus animals and the lions and stuff. It's very gladiatorial, but they've got like weapons and they have to fight the tigers and lions and whatnot. And a bunch of them revolt and go against their carny master and take the fight to Edgar, one of them being a female who gets captured, and she and Lola become friends, and Lola also becomes friends with the head of the security for Edgar, who is also a female, and she kind of turns her to her side, and just as they're trying to make their move, kind of all of the vectors of the stories kind of come together in the finale, where you've got Conrad and his gang coming to rescue Lola, and the carnies coming to rescue the girl, and the carnival owner guy coming to get, you know, his carny property back, and Edgar trying to keep the upper hand all along. And it makes for a very satisfying solution to the story. At the same time, what really is nice is that it's very cleanly and very well drawn. It's a beautiful to look at book. Not particularly overly cheesecakey. Not that the artist being a female necessarily affects that or not. But I thought it was very tastefully drawn, even though that the female protagonist is beautiful. And it was just a cool story. I had a lot of fun with it. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I would say it's not, especially for Aspen, it's not cheesecake at all. This is one of their more prim and proper titles. I see her at a lot of the shows, and she was at Free Comic Book Day. She had done a variant cover, a beautiful variant, Spider-Gwen variant cover.
Oh, wow, I bet.
And so she was selling the first series in floppies, she had a deal for all six issues. I don't remember what, but I'm like, yeah, it's good. And so, you know, I like her art. I'll try it. So I bought all six and she signed them all. And, you know, it was kind of nice getting them in a deal. And I'm with you. Like, the art, I think, is really nice. The story, it's fine. It's engaging. It's the type of thing, you can pick it apart pretty quickly.
Sure.
So you really need to kind of disengage. I know we've been talking a lot about how a lot of the new books, there's a trend to make things very realistic and thought out. And this is not in that, like, you'll drive yourself crazy running that down quickly.
You have to stay with that. It's a small story in a big world. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not try to it's not like Lazarus where it's a big world and
yes.
This world is really thought out and we're going to get to it all. This is just a nice story.
Yeah, but her color, like, as you kind of mentioned, there's the detail in the front, but the colors just kind of are impressionistic almost for the backgrounds, which makes a nice, and kind of makes the figure work kind of pop out a little bit too in a good way. Plus, I think she does a pretty bang up job with animals, which are not always the easiest. You know, sometimes depictions of animals in these books can be kind of rough.
Yeah, she does.
And I thought, like you mentioned, there are horses and tigers and lions and all this stuff. And, you know, I think all in all, it was a solid, you know, and the six issues move very quickly. I don't know if you can get like a deal. I guess Aspen printed up a whole bunch of the floppies, so they were really cheap. But yeah, I would totally be on board if she cooked up another one. I've seen some of her covers and everything, and I hope she continues to do work.
It is on Comixology as well. And yeah, I mean, I'm very intrigued by her as a creator. I'm going to definitely be keeping my eye out for her. I wish she was on this coast bopping around to the cons. But there was actually a sequel, but the sequel wasn't really a sequel, Andrew. It was another story, but in the same world.
I also saw it wasn't written by her either.
That's what I was going to say next, is it was written by Vince Hernandez, and it was called Lola XOXO Wasteland Madam, which is suggestive of her sort of being like a madam, and it's more that her name is Madeline, and she is engaged to her fiancé in the Chicago area, and the nuclear war happens, and she oddly isn't affected with radiation, even though she was pretty close to the blast, but her fiance is. So he goes the way of the angels, and she ends up getting tied to this group of survivors who are held up in this airstrip base that's kind of defendable to some extent, but not forever. So they spend their time salvaging, and it's O'Hara Airport, I should say, the airstrip. And they're salvaging a plane, a big, like, Boeing-type plane, while they're fighting off invaders and trying to keep their supplies up. And their mission is they want to, like, fly off to some Shangri-La, like Australia or something. Jamaica, let's say. They come to this catch-22 situation where, like, the only pilot to fly them off the out of O'Hare is the guy who is their enemy. So she has to go and convince him and bargain with him to gain his allegiance to help them when he's been trying to wipe them out all this time. It's an okay story, but having read the other Lola story, I was more interested in the story of Lola and whether she's going to go to the West Coast and whether she's going to try to find her parents and all that sort of business. And this was just a left turn completely to talk about this other lady and her world, even though it was, you know, again, it's interesting and beautifully drawn. And Sia draws a great airplane as well, which also isn't easy to draw and not make look silly. Just ask Kirby and Ditko.
Yeah, I see Vince at all the... He's always at the Aspen booth. He's like an editor. I don't know if he's part owner too, but he's pretty high up. Like whenever they do the publisher panels or whatever, he's always on one of them and everything. But yeah, like she's also a really super nice person for my limited interactions with her too. So always cool when you meet someone really talented and they're nice and down to earth and not mean or anything.
I wonder what her commissions are like. What else you got cooking, Andrew?
Well, I wanted to give a couple of quick... I'll try and make these a bit quicker as to not run this thing too long. But, I picked up issue 2 from David Walter, the mascot Zodiac. I'm pretty sure I mentioned this before. But like a lot of these guys, if you go to davidwalter.com, you can get part of the first issue there. So you can read what I picked. You know, I don't think it's the full thing. I don't, to be honest, I don't entirely remember the first issue. It was over a year. You know, these things happen to everybody. As you get older, your memory fades. But I did like it enough to buy it, the issue 2. And when I read issue 2, I suddenly remembered what I liked. And he does very selective use of color, where there only be like one or two colors in the book. And I just think it really pops. You know what I mean? Like the first is about, it's autobiographical. What's interesting, it's about him as a little kid. We're more of the, and usually they're only about a little kid if they're getting abused or whatever, but this is very lighthearted. And his parents moved to Colorado, and his mom and dad went to rival college teams. So he talks about going to the game. So the mom's in the one green color and the dad's in the blue. And I just think it really works with everything else being black and white, just having this green and blue mixed in. And then at other times, a few other colors mix in. Because the little kid's got this kind of fascination with sort of animal totems. So when he finds out that the sports mascots are animals, that just fires his imagination up. It's like the Rams versus the Eagles or some Falcons or some, who knows. I don't follow college football. Falcons versus the Rams. That was it. And that part just fires up and he starts drawing and imagining everybody as, you know, one or two of these animals. And he has his own animal totem, which is the cheetah. And he likes to dress up because he dressed up at a Halloween one time as the cheetah. And I'm led to believe, I don't remember this personally, but a lot of little kids like to wear their Halloween outfits all the time or
heck yeah,
like to dress up.
So you're lucky really... if they make it to Halloween with the Halloween costume still intact.
So I just really like the art and the flavor. And then it's really kind of, I mean, he has his introspective moments, but it's really upbeat, and it's not, you know, some, like I said, autobio stuff can be really grim and gritty, and I was beaten every day with a shovel or whatever, and this is just a fun type of thing. And then I also doubled down with a second autobio book by Hazel Neulevant, Neulevant, and she has a Tumblr. And I really liked Hazel. She was super honest when I asked the question about what do you, she had a couple different books. What do you like the most and what's the best representative? She was like, well, I worked on this anthology and I like that because that one cost the most money. So I picked up her single issue, which was only $4. So that seemed like a deal. I mean, most of the floppies, there were $5. So I got the first issue of No Ivy League, which talks about her first summer job, which was removing ivy from this park. I guess the national parks hired kids to pluck. You know, I guess ivy is an invasive foreign species.
Yeah, it clings.
And they need it. So it's kind of cool. She uses an ink wash style, which is really fun. It wasn't like an ink wash. I mean, it's no Steve Ditko ink wash, but...
Ding! That's the second Ditko. Somehow, Kevin, you have to work Ditko in before the end of the episode.
Well, it was funny that I told Andrew about that Ditko Kickstarter that just came on again. He's always kicking those starters.
Yeah, I had to jump on that one. Well, technically, it's Robin Snyder kickstarting it, but I'm going to hope that Ditko
gets... Yeah,
I'm
sure she's having to kickstart him. Go on, Steve! Hang out those pages!
Well, I just hope he's getting paid or something. I don't know. And as I said, I'm a little paranoid that somehow it's some big bamboozling and he's not getting his fair share or whatever.
No, Robin Snyder. She's okay with him.
It's just amazing that of all the, like, that he would still be banging out pages even though you don't really, like, hear from him except for, like, something like that. Like, that's just crazy that he's still going, but other people... You know, stopped
have
or...
faded. It's a fair amount of reprint material. It's also little essays and stuff. Yep. It's not always a ton of I mean, it's good for me because I kind of missed a lot of that stuff. But
yeah,
even I find myself running around.
I can.
But anyways,
Steve Ditko book, and at the end, I can see Andrew's name in the credits. How fun is that? I don't care if it's yes. Prince. It's Mr.
So,
A.
Hey, maybe it's after me. But Hazel does this is a really cool ink wash. You can go to her Tumblr. All these kids have Tumblrs. It just felt like, wow, I'm buying a comic from an artist right off their Tumblr.
Pretty cool.
But it's like two generations meeting. But I really dig. In fact, it says here that she's promoting that anthology at Meltdown this Wednesday. She's up in New York City normally. So it's kind of a pain for me to go to Meltdown, but I might do it Wednesday just to buy this anthology. Because I like this book enough that maybe I'll check out this other one too. I don't know. I don't know if I'll make it there. But anyways, I wanted to give her a shout out. I thought it was really cool. Like I said, I like when they kind of, I thought she had a good table presence and I like her work. And, you know, it's just cool buying people's comics from them. And I feel like there's like an energy there. It's cool.
Sweet.
But I'm probably just old and senile.
Kevin got,
got some other books too.
Got a swan song book or a couple of quickies?
Either. Like, I'll go into one for sure anyways. I don't really want to get into the plot a whole lot, but I was pretty impressed with Ivar Time Walker number 11 by Valiant. The Valiant Corner has returned, everyone. this issue was by Fred Van Lente, Prayer Perez and Andrew Dollhouse. But what was really impressive about this is there's like 1,000 stories or like 1,000 panels in one of the pages. And it sort of works with how this title has been going since the beginning. And really how like all of Van Lente's work at Valiant has been sort of like leading up to something like he planted something a couple years ago, and it's in here, and you're like, that's kind of crazy, but, like, that's long form. Like, who would have known that he would have even got a chance to, like, put something in here? But since Ivar's the Time Walker, there's a lot of opportunity to do a lot of, you know, time traveling and crazy stuff like that. But needless to say, the two main characters in here are sort of, like, outside of time. Like, they're, like, in between alternate realities. So you see them on this two-page spread. They're, like, looking at all these other, like, realities, other dimensions, other possibilities. So there's, like, all these circles, like, emanating out of where the circle they're in. And on top of that, like, in one of them, they might be mermaids. Or, I don't know, whatever crazy, you know, sci-fi trope that would alter, like, their worlds. It's actually dialogue for, like, half of these worlds. So you sort of, like, follow the dialogue around the page, and you see all these different takes and, I don't know, possible future stories that they could cover in all these different dimensions. Huh. And the whole issue just sort of continues following that path. Like, they don't have 1,000 of panels, like, per page all the time, but you keep on seeing some of these worlds show up again and again in various combinations in all these different circles. So it's not really so much broken down by panels, it's just broken down by, like, circles, or circles behind circles. It's pretty nice.
Circles?
But everything's sort of, like, coming around on this book, so it's ending with issue 12, so it looks like it'll be, like, a really nice, not entirely self-contained, but a really nice story that you can go back to. And it's been pretty crazy watching it, like, evolve and change and do all that time kookiness.
Well, Kevin, as you know, time is a flat circle.
Naturally.
If I could have time in a bottle.
You'd spend it all with Indie Comic Book Noise?
I'd spend it with the Image Creators, who I am going to check in with before we wrap up this episode. First, comic book confession. I never read the Wildcats or what was Youngblood or Spawn or any of the original Image wave of Image Founder books back in the day. I wanted to see those. I wanted to see those creators doing the Marvel characters, and looking back, I guess I kind of saw that first wave of books kind of for what they were, and was just getting back into comics around that time and didn't really put my money in that direction. I mean, I went back and read Savage Dragon from the beginning years later, but that was like around issue 50 when I jumped on.
So, you can still pick up the other one, Steve. Yeah. In fact, you can get a lot of them pretty cheap. So,
so first, looking at what some of these Image creators are doing now, I just got a couple of books here. One is Image United. McFarlane and Larson are together on Spawn now, the regular monthly Spawn book, beginning with Spawn 258, which is the one I read. There, guys, it's three pages of establishing shots with caption boxes, right? And then there's not a lick of dialogue or a caption box in the entire book. There's 17 pages of wordless battle until the very last panel of the last page where there's one word balloon. This issue is awesome. Spawn is in hell. He's in hell and he's fighting his way through the hordes of hell. And it's just like, it's like reading a prison pit book, but you know, in drawn by Larson, it's so hilarious. It was very entertaining.
But Steve, I gotta know, does he run into Godzilla in hell at any point?
No. Although that book is still good. The finale of that was enjoyable. The other book I looked at is, so I'm definitely on for Spawn now with Larson drawing it. Who doesn't want to see the hordes of hell drawn by Larson? Worth it for the two-page splash alone.
So he must be killing himself also doing Savage Dragon, or are they going to cross over or something?
Yeah, who knows? They have in the past, but there's not really a need to here. Larson's occasionally done his other little things here and there at the same time, and Savage Dragon's schedule usually suffers, but so be it. He likes to do other things and flex his muscles. And here, it's very entertaining. It looks like Venom with his pointy teeth and tongue sticking out, swirling around and everything.
All that saliva?
Yeah. The other one is what Rob Liefeld, one of his books, Bloodstrike, also from Image. There's been two issues out from earlier this year in 2015, written and drawn by Liefeld. And again, due to my comic book confession, I don't know who Bloodstrike is. He apparently is one of or is connected to Youngblood. But basically, it took about two pages to get the gist that he's a Deadpool analog. But this is Deadpool to the max.
Two pages. Look at that. Steve, you're giving him a lot of credit.
The issue starts, the art is great, though. He's invading, infiltrating, straight up attacking this ninja citadel. It's bloody as hell. There's limbs, there's blood everywhere on every page. He gets taken down by some chick. I don't know if we're supposed to know who she is. Tragedy Ann. I'm thinking, where's Andy, right? And he gets chopped in half and suspended by chains, and he pulls himself apart, like, against the chains, like, ripping off his arm out of his shoulder to try to escape. But then he's just hanging there by one arm, and he's got no leverage, so he can't do the escape part. But fortunately, there's a cable analog to save him. Even using the term body sliding as he comes teleporting in,
wow,
carrying the big gun, and Bloodstrike and he are escaping, and Tragedy Ann has Bloodstrike's junk in a jar. She's got his wiener. And the end page of issue one is a big splash page of his cock in a jar and her holding it up saying, ah, ha, ha, look what I got. The second issue starts with this hero, Professor Knight, being betrayed by one of his own. And then we've got Deadpool and Cable taking on a trio. Well, you know, not Bloodshot and whoever the Cable guy is, taking on this trio of super bad guys. And the whole issue is like this fight issue. And the issue ends with this feral alien character, Blood Wolf. All right. Guess where the U, the substitute U, is. Is it in the U or in the wolf?
Both.
No, that's a good guess. Kevin? Where's the U in Blood Wolf?
Blood Wolf. It's got to be the second letter.
I think...
The second one? So in wolf?
Yeah.
The wolf is a U? Bing, yeah. Bing, 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 bing.
It's hey!
Blood Wolf with a wolf U. But anyway, this Blood Wolf character comes in and totally disembowels Blood Strike. But the issue doesn't end exactly there. There's also like this little epilogue where there's a, you know, the issues about this Bloodstrike character. There's this evil and oppositely colored Blackstrike. Ah, it's so funny. It's visually great comics. It's totally fun. Doesn't strain your brain at all. Big dumb fun. There's even a splash page that is an homage to Captain America 181. And in the back, it shows the Captain America cover and the panel and explains, Rob explains his love of that cover and why it meant so much to him and why he ripped it off for the panel. And I found it really fun and a fun exercise meditation in Rob Liefeld comic land. It was okay. Check it out.
Well, if... I'm sorry, Steve. If they'd spelled Bloodstrike with a Y, I would have bought it. But come on,
two U's. I never even thought of that. Blood in the U in the blood and the wolf. That's even better than. it would have been funnier if it was a trick question. But there's what some of the Image founders are doing. They're making comics.
You can make comics too.
You can. And if they're, you do, and it's not for the big two, maybe we'll talk about them here on Indie Comic Book Noise. That's another episode, gang. We'll try to get Phil back from the hinterlands and connected. And we will come back with some more books before the end of this month in the new year. I promise. Sound good?
That sounds great.
All right. And you sounded pretty good, too, Kevin. You made it. All right, gang. See you next episode. Later.
Was the night that Santa was coming around. I was sitting by the fireplace burning it down. A thought came to me, silly as it seemed. How's Santa gonna fill my little boy's dreams with the flames from a fireplace lighting the house tonight? Well, I got to thinking that my timing was poor, but it's freezing outside and I gotta keep warm. Hoping Santa's got the sense to be using the door, cause this fire's gonna burn for a few hours more. But as fate should have it, he came flying right by tonight. Cause the flames were rising like a California blaze, and the sky turned black with a blind smoky haze. Turned to the TV and the newsman read that Santa's sleigh went down, and that was all he said. When a noise outside gave me quite a fright. Then I heard a pounding at my front door. When I opened it up, I nearly hit the floor. Cause I never did believe in Santa before. There he was at my front door. And boy, was he pissed. He stood there staring a moment at me, choosing his words so carefully. His hair was cindered and his suit was charred. His sleigh was smoking in my front yard. And I could tell I wasn't getting any presents tonight. Well, Santa said, son, are you some kind of fool? Haven't you heard about the Christmas rule? Lighting a fire on Christmas Eve. Now, come on, buddy, don't you believe in little boys and girls being happy on Christmas Day? Then he looked at my barn and said, we're in luck. I can fit all my things in your pickup truck. A reindeer will ride in your trailer, you see. We'll deliver presents, you and me. So I hope you got a full tank of gas. Well, I was up all night and driving all over town. Santa, he was passing all the presents around. By the time I got home, it was 8:30. My wife was standing at our front gate. And boy, was she pissed. She said, boy, you better make this good, cause it's Christmas Day and you know you should have stayed home last night instead of running around, ramming with your buddies all over town. And by the way, what's that smoldering mess in our front yard? Then I saw my chance to make things right. Started telling her about last night. I told about Santa and his plight and how my fire burned way too high. Brought Santa and his reindeer crashing down last night.
Perfectly clear. A chimney fire on Christmas Eve can ruin your year.